on the new proposed city ordinance that would greatly restrict how many groups provide food to Houston's homeless. Among the voices we will hear is KPFT's Dewey, as well as local Houston attorney Sunshine. But first, these headlines.
On Thursday, thousands of Chilean students flooded the streets of Santiago demanding free, quality education as well as the reinstatement of students excluded from school for protesting in 2011. Supporters of the movement, including trade unions and teachers across Chile, cite the nation's current educational system as being a huge cost and low quality. The demonstration was the first large mobilization this year by Chile's student movement. Clashes broke out as hundreds of protesters tried to break through police lines outside the education ministry. Police responded to peaceful protest and civil disobedience with tear gas and water cannons. Over 50 arrests were made. Under Pinochet, state funding for public education was slashed, privatization encouraged, and responsibility for public schools passed to municipalities. The result has been a system dividing those who can afford private schools and those who are relegated to lower quality public schools or benefit from public school in wealthy neighborhoods. Chilean students staged more than 40 street marches in 2011. Some of them drew more than 100,000 people, making them the country's largest rally since the end of Augusto Pinochet's dictatorship in 1990. The struggle in the nation continues.
Early Friday morning, actor George Clooney, along with Martin Luther King III, several members of Congress and other activists were arrested by the U.S. Secret Service and taken away in plastic handcuffs outside the Sudan Embassy on Massachusetts Avenue in Washington, D.C. The protest was well as Clooney's appearance and arrest had been orchestrated in advance. Plans for the nonviolent protest had been announced Thursday in a statement by Representative Jim Moran, Democrat, Vermont, who was also arrested during the demonstration. The group was protesting the Sudanese hunger crisis, accusing President Omar al-Bashir of blocking food and humanitarian assistance from reaching hundreds of thousands of Sudanese. Sudan, the largest nation on the continent of Africa, has been at war for half a century, with impoverishment border regions clashing with Khartoum for more political power and a greater share in the country's wealth. An ongoing humanitarian crisis in Darfur in the West has resulted in over 300,000 deaths to date and about 2.2 million displaced by fighting since 2003.
And Senate Republicans have continued the noble GOP battle against mothers, wives, and daughters by opposing renewal of the Violence Against Women Act, a law that has historically had bipartisan support. The act, initially passed in 1994, was originally written to provide support for women in abusive situations. The reauthorization made it out of the Judiciary Committee in November, in spite of no Republican voting for the revisions. The issues that Republicans charge are, quote, inviting opposition, include an expansion of domestic violence services for American Indian women living on reservations and women in rural areas. The expanded law also buttresses the definition of domestic violence to include stalking. The most contentious provisions that have the Senate postured for an all-out battle royale, however, include temporary visas for undocumented immigrants who are victims of domestic abuse and expansion of domestic violence services to same-sex couples.
In an opinion piece in the Houston Chronicle, Hank Rush, the CEO of Star of Hope, among others, stated that organizations like the Star of Hope have licensed kitchens, trained volunteer staff, are in compliance with the City of Houston's health and safety standards, and feed the hungry on a routine schedule. However, Rush warns of other organizations which the ordinance would seek to regulate due to concerns about ensuring charitable feeding operations abide by minimum health standards. This helps reduce sickness that can create additional public health concerns that can burden our public health care providers. home-cooked meals would be completely banned by the new amendment to the city's code of ordinances. So the question arises, how does Food Not Bombs, which shares home-cooked meals, stack up in terms of health concerns against Star of Hope? Food Not Bombs and Indie Media volunteer Nick Cooper asked homeless at Food Not Bombs to compare the two.
Nick, I'm here at the Pierce Elevated, and I'm talking to a gentleman here. What's your feelings about the Star of Hope?
They get sick eating their food. Even got sick. My mother then got sick the most. My mama named her Betty Ward.
I'm out here at the library. We're serving some food. My question is, how would you say that Food Not Bombs and Star of Hope compare?
Actually, the food here is more healthier to me. I've stayed at Star of Hope with my family for 3 months, and we end up getting food poisoning and spending the night at LBJ. They had to put saline on, plus I took because we were dehydrated because of food poisoning we received from Star of Hope food.
What's your name?
My name is Edward Ray Urzel.
You said your whole family got sick?
Yes. Me, my wife, and my two sons.
Wow. Why do you think that food poisoning occurs there?
Well, because most of the stuff is I guess it was expired.
All right, this is Nick. I'm down here at the library, and we're here at Food Not Bombs, and I'm just wondering, do you think we're likely to give anybody food poisoning, or do you think Star Hope would be more likely, or how would you compare the food between the two places?
The vegans, they do a good job. They do what they do. You know what I'm saying? They feed the people, give them, you know what I'm saying, healthy foods. You know what I'm saying? As opposed to a Star Hope. Star Hope, I mean, the food, I'm not going to lie, it's pretty good, but at the same time, I think the Vegas is more healthy.
How would you compare the food here at Food Not Bombs to Star Hope?
I want to go to Star Hope. I got a 17-month-old daughter that I've brought in both to the Star Hope and Food Not Bombs, and the food's healthier here, tastes better, it's clean. The people are clean.
He
ain't got stuff that's like rotted green, not knowing when it expired and why you have to eat it.
So Star Hope is a little questionable?
Kind of questionable. That's an understatement.
Thanks. What would you say is the difference between Food Not Bombs food and Star Hope food?
The Star Hope puts no care in their food and it tastes like prison food. And Food Not Bombs is cooked from the home, and they make sure it's healthy and good and wonderful and hot.
Okay, here we are. We're out here at Food Not Bombs. How would you say the food at Food Not Bombs compares to the food over at Star Hope?
Oh, my gosh. It's so much better here.
Oh, yeah? Why?
It's just better quality and healthier.
So have you ever had a bad experience with the food at Star Hope?
Yes.
Like what?
We ended up sick from it.
Who? How many people?
Well, I don't know. There's hundreds in there.
Wow, so the whole place, everybody got sick from it?
Yeah.
Hey, this is Nick. I'm out here at Food Not Bombs. Tell me, what's your experience like eating at Food Not Bombs versus eating at Star Hope?
They serve meat. No.
And how is it? Is it good meat?
Yes.
Have you ever had any problem with the food there?
No.
Have you ever had any problem with the food here?
No.
What's it like eating here compared to eating at Star Hope?
It's a lot better out here than eating at Star Hope.
Why? What's wrong with Star Hope?
Well, sometimes the food ain't right, but out here, it's always right.
How does the food here compare to food at Star Hope? Which one's safer? Which one's healthier?
I can tell you for the fact that Food Not Bombs food is 1,000 times healthier than anything you'll get at Star Hope and probably some other shelters too, because first of all, it's vegan, vegetarian food. You don't have to worry about things like cholesterol.
And then what about Star Hope? What do you have to worry about there?
Well, the quality of food is just not that good. I mean, they'll probably give you a slice of ham, a small thing of rice and beans, but I mean, it's not anything really wholesome.
How do you feel about the quality of food here at Food Not Bombs versus at Star Hope?
One thing I can say about the food I get here is anytime I come out, I'm prepared to get vegetables, something I don't get regularly at Star Hope. They may give you one, but one thing they do give a lot of is pork. And I know that's not good for you, a whole lot of pork and ham, that kind of stuff. So that's been my experience over there. They try to do the best they can, I imagine, but I do know it's been some stuff that tastes kind of bad. That was kind of outdated.
And once again, that was Nick Cooper bringing us perspectives from various homeless people as he was providing food with Food Not Bombs out in the greater Houston area. Right now we have Dewey, who is the board op for the prison show. He also has some direct interactions or things to share about Star of Hope, as well as in general what it's like to be homeless in the streets of Houston. And also on the phone we have Sunshine, who's going to provide some legal perspective surrounding the new proposed city ordinance. But first, Dewey, why don't you go ahead and just sort of share your direct experience with Star of Hope and other such shelters?
Well, I was going to give a disclaimer stating that it's been 7 or 8 years since I've stayed at the Star of Hope, so my information may have been somewhat outdated. But after listening to the interview, I found that it sounds like it's gotten worse.
And what were some of your experiences 7 or 8 years ago?
Well, they say that it's kind of a transition to get you help, find a job. No. They had you to leave at certain early in the morning. Then, if you wanted a bed that night, you had to stay there and get a bed ticket. And which precluded you from going to a job that early. And if you missed, if you weren't there by the time they closed the doors, which was fairly early in the afternoon, you were barred for 3 days, which also precluded you from having a job because you wouldn't be there by the time you got a bed ticket.
You know, I think one of the things, Rachel, and I think Dewey's hitting on one aspect of this issue right now. What we're faced with are basically two questions, I think, around this whole new ordinance. And unfortunately, we don't have the time to go into the specifics of the proposed ordinance, which is due to come up, I think, for a final vote this Tuesday at City Hall. And we can give some information about that a little bit later. But I think the question is, why now? You know, why is this city ordinance, after years and years of people sharing, coming up now? You know, what's in it for the parties of interest? You know, why is Star of Hope so avid about this ordinance? And I think we have to ask ourselves, you know, there's a certain financial aspect to this, just like the privatization of a lot of things in this society, the privatization, the corporatization of feeding. You know, Star of Hope has a lot to lose when there are 1,000 people a week getting fed by other organizations. That's 1,000 people that they can't try to get funding for, or some of these other big nonprofits. And then there's the quality, like I think that Dewey was, you know, talking about.
And that's a great segue. Sunshine, I understand you're on the phone with us. Can you maybe talk a little bit, some specifics of the legal ramifications and possible financial benefits that organizations like Star of Hope, which while they are nonprofits, perhaps a city ordinance like this would be advantageous for them as far as grants and those sorts of things. Can you kind of get into the legal and profit motives?
Sure. I there are First Amendment implications, and I was there last week, and I hope I can be there next week at the city council meeting. And one of the things that I talked about was that the way that this question is presented by Food Not Bombs and other organizations, it is expressive conduct. And that's my personal opinion, but also the opinion of the Houston chapter of the National Lawyers Guild and a lot of other groups. And so when something is considered expressive conduct, it's speech. And so the First Amendment protections come into play. And there's no doubt, based on all the, and I'm going to call it testimony in front of the city council, every person who got up and spoke, whether it was somebody who has received help or food from Food Not Bombs or somebody who volunteers with any of those groups, it is a deeply felt personal commitment that people have. And that's why it gets this First Amendment protection. It's an expression of either religion or humanity, however you want to look at it. And so it's a very serious problem when you have government entities of all kinds who make these rules and they want to administrate away our humanity. And there are ways, you know, it's not that the government can't regulate speech, because they can, but it has to be, things have to be tailored towards specific circumstances. They can have time, place, and manner regulations. But the angle that the city council has taken, and the others, the business interests who stood up and spoke at City Hall, they have a financial interest, a financial stake in this system that they're creating. And all this grant money, like you were talking, you asked about at the last part of the question, they get millions of dollars of federal grant money, the city does, and then the city turns around and gives that money, you know, to the various organizations of its choosing. So, of course, the organizations that stand to get millions of dollars to support their efforts are going to be for it, because they have to. That's part of their deal.
You know, earlier we were talking, you know, Dew, you were sharing some, I think, very insightful information with us before the show on how Star of Hope operates. You know, maybe a lot of people think that, oh, Star of Hope, you go down there whenever you're hungry and you get a meal. But it isn't quite like that. And maybe you could kind of at this point share, you know, very briefly how it works, what you have to go through to get a meal from Star of Hope.
Well, like I said earlier, you have to be there at a certain time. You have to get your bed ticket in the morning. You have to be there in the afternoon. I don't know what the times are anymore. But if you're not there, you're out. And you have to be inside to get dinner.
And so what effect do you think that has on someone that may be working or that's trying to get a job? So on one hand, they tell you, go out and get a job, go out and work, and somebody gets a job and maybe the schedule is not an 8-to-5 job. Then where are they?
Well, I had that problem. I found a job when I was staying at Star of Hope. And at the time, they had a certain amount of beds. I can't remember exactly how many, but it wasn't that many. So I told them, I had a job. I want a bed where I can have, where I don't have, where I have the same bed every night. Don't have to get a bed ticket. Oh, they're all full. There's a 45-day waiting list. You're set up for failure.
Wow. And also, Sunshine, another issue that comes up with this whole ordinance and Star of Hope and agencies like Star of Hope is that they don't always reach the chronically homeless or those that do not frequent shelters for whatever reason, be it substance abuse or mental health issues. Can you talk a little bit about the ramifications, legal and otherwise, to this ordinance being passed as far as what, you know, what ramifications it would have on them as well as the working poor?
Well, I mean, access to food, unfortunately, we don't really have case law in this country that says that access to food is a human right. But this is the argument that we are making at this point. And I think we all have to be concerned, or we should be concerned, when a government entity intends to, it's not a crime that somebody's necessarily going to be arrested for. It's an administrative kind of quasi-criminal proceeding. That's what I would call it. But the impact is, I can't imagine what the impact would be. I really frankly can't, because there are people who maybe that's the only meal they get that day is when if they make it to Food Not Bombs. And, I mean, as a society, we have to think, we have to ask ourselves, can we allow this, can we allow the sharing of food to become basically a crime? It's outrageous. And even the lawyers, we scratch our heads and look at each other and say, I can't believe we have to make this argument in public.
Now, does City Council have any quantitative data that supports their argument?
No, we haven't seen it. I'll say, I didn't mean to cut you off, but that's the one thing that we kept asking last time at the City Hall, and they didn't even offer it to us. They didn't even, they had nothing, not even real anecdotes, not even a story they could share. Somebody they could, you'd think if there was somebody who had been sick from Food Not Bombs or some other non-approved facility food, that they would have paraded them down there and had them say, oh, please, please, you know, give me a law to protect my health and safety. But what they've done is created a solution for a problem that doesn't exist. And if they have proof that this is somehow taxing the public health system because people are getting unsafe food, if they have proof, why don't they give it to us? I cannot imagine.
You know, Sunshine,
because what it's going to mean is instead of somebody, I mean, it's going to mean somebody will starve as opposed to getting that sandwich. And I don't know how they can say that that is, that is not.
Hey, you know, Sunshine, I had, when this whole thing came up a couple of weeks ago, I called my council member and the staff person that I was talking to. You know, that was the question I posed to them. Where is this danger that you're talking about? I said, do you have figures on that? You know, how many people have gotten sick? The health department tracks that stuff. And she said, well, you know, no, we don't have any figures. But the reason that we don't is because the people that eat at Food Not Bombs do not have the opportunity to call in and report it. That's the excuse they're giving.
That doesn't even make sense.
I know.
It's not even logical.
Well, Sunshine, also, if I can jump in on this, this is Dewey. When I was in the service, I was the medical department. And when I was at the Star of Hope, they allegedly sent them through food service courses. But when I would go through the line to get my food, I would occasionally ask them, the servers, questions, and none of them could answer the simplest food service questions, health questions.
Oh, well, I mean, I'm not surprised by that.
That blows the theory right there about having to go to food health services with food for bombs.
Ridiculous. We cook foods for ourselves and our families every day at home. There's no, are they going to come into our kitchen next and say you can't have a stove in your house if you don't have the approved safety course? I mean, I don't mean to sound alarmist, but we have to, I mean, these are the questions we have to ask ourselves if we're willing to submit to more and more and more and more control over things we should freely do.
You know, I've never had a Star of Hope, and we keep using Star of Hope. There are a couple other places like that, but these corporate nonprofits, I've never eaten a meal from there. But, you know, having listened to Dewey and other folks and having worked with Food Not Bombs for several months and cooked a lot of meals and cooked a lot of food for sharing through Food Not Bombs, I think we have, you know, if there's a health issue, it's not on the part of people that are serving on the streets. I think the real health concern is with facilities like Star of Hope that are trying to serve, quote, food at the cheapest rock bottom price that they can find. Unlike Food Not Bombs, where people really put a lot of into those meals, there's no way that an organization like Star of Hope can match the quality and health of the food that's being served at, like, Food Not Bombs.
Well, and think about the city, other city or county agencies that provide food services. Think of the jail, okay? I've been in the holdover cells and in the jails in this city and county, and I recently had a client in the holdover in court hold up a piece of bologna, and three or four guys held it up. The bologna was rotten. That's what they served them, rotten bologna sandwiches. So is that a health and safety? Does that pass the health and safety code? I saw it with my own eyes.
And Sunshine, also, there are a lot of children also that, you know, rely on meals. I mean, how will this affect children also? Because they don't mention much about children, but there are a lot of children that are with their parents during times where they do have to stay in a homeless shelter.
I guess if we're still talking about the food that's provided to people in institutions, because that's what they are. It's part of the bigger question that we're all asking ourselves about our food and what, you know, what's in it. What are we, you know, and I mean, the more regimented these things become, the more it affects everyone. And children are most susceptible. They're the most likely to be poor, the most likely to be homeless, the most likely to not have health care or food. So they're going to make it even more difficult make it even more likely that these children will just suffer and die.
Okay, Sunshine, I want to do a real quick rebuttal here. Not all homeless shelters are like the Star of Hope. I've stated several, but the Star of Hope was by far the worst. There are several I stayed in that did have decent food and decent housing, but I would not wish the Star of Hope on an enemy.
I've heard that. I've heard that from some of my clients, that they'd rather, some people that I've talked to would rather be in the street than at the Star of Hope.
Yeah, and I think the reason for dealing with Star of Hope in such a direct way is because on this issue, they have taken the lead in pushing forth this new proposed ordinance.
Yes, and I'll say I had a conversation with someone involved in one of these organizations that the city approves of. Part people are part of the system, and their comment was, well, but you know, our concern is that people are just going to go and get the food, and they're not going to get the other help that they need. You know, meaning signing up for other services like or getting ID cards, whatever the other services are that these big, you know, corporate nonprofits provide. But I don't buy it.
Right.
Because there's not enough, they haven't proven, there's no study, there's, you know, there's nothing showing us what, there's nothing to back up their claim.
Right. And we're just about out of time. Can you please maybe share some websites where people can get more information? I also want to direct people to the Indie Bay website, indiebay.org, where you can hear more voices of opposition to this proposed city ordinance.
Yes, I would say the City of Houston website, you can go on there and find out who your council person is. So I would do that, or you can just call the city secretary and find out how your council person, who your council person is, if you don't know. And so I would definitely do that. You could go to food, you know, look up Food Not Bombs online for more information. The National Lawyers Guild has websites. We have, you know, things dedicated specifically to these issues. So there are lots of resources like that where people can go for more information.
Okay, thank you so much, Sunshine, and also thank you, Dewey. Before we sign off, I would like to also remind people that there is a silent protest to end the administrative detention for Hana Shalabi. That will be tomorrow from 11 to 12 at the corner of Westland and Norfolk near the Israeli consulate. Hana Shalabi is on her 29th day of a continuous hunger strike to protest her detention without charge or trial by Israel.
And that does it for another week here at the Indie Media Show. For listeners out there wanting to directly plug in and get involved in this issue, City Council is set to hear public comment and vote on the measure this upcoming Tuesday from 2 to 5 p.m. Also, Food Not Bombs continue to provide vegetarian meals to the city's homeless population outside the Houston Library. You can meet up with the group immediately following our broadcast, as well as on Sunday and Monday. For more information, visit and link the group page on Facebook. We'd like to thank Rachel and John for our co-producers, and also Courtney, our board op, for the revolution. And also thank you from what show? The Prisoner Show?
Prisoner Show. Oh, I'll be on again later.
Thank you.
Okay, great. And also, regardless of how things shake down with the city ordinance, Sunday, April 1st is a national call of action. Food is a right, not a privilege. The public is encouraged on Sunday, April 1st to share meals with their community to celebrate our right to share food and end all efforts to restrict acts of compassion. Peace.
What a great way to stomp out hunger.
Do you work for social transformation? Would you like to do so with a greater sense of connection to your vision and joy? Would you like to speak up for peace with more capacity to inspire action? To communicate for justice with more agency? I'm learning nonviolent communication. With it, I'm equipping myself to speak with a deeper sense of my own power. Attend a free introduction to nonviolent communication Saturday, March 17th, or Saturday, April 21st. Learn how to communicate so as to create a world that works for all of us. Visit www.houstonnvc.org for more information. That's houstonnvc.org. Let's learn together how to advance the urgent task of peace and